Ramona Africa from the Move Movement. Thanks for speaking to us today. And we're coming up to the anniversary of the May 13th, 1985 bombing of the Move House. Can you tell us a bit more what happened? And sort of it led to quite a bit of tragedy and things, but can you tell us a bit more about what happened and the sort of the context in which it happened?
Absolutely. The first thing I would like to say is that the government, through the news media, tried to convince people that what happened in May of 85, which, by the way, began on Sunday, May 12th, Mother's Day, and went into Monday, May 13th, but it began on Mother's Day. I'm sure you're familiar with that holiday called Mother's Day here in the States. Anyway, the government through the media tried to convince people that the reason that they came out there and had to take such vicious action was because some neighbors had complaints about us. Now, the Osage Avenue area was predominantly black, working to middle class neighborhood, and whether or not neighbors had complaints about Move is not even the issue, because even if they did, that would never come close to justifying the actions taken by the government. But the fact is, this government had never cared about anybody complaining about their neighbors, particularly black people complaining about their neighbors. But they want people to believe that they were just so concerned about some complaints from black people on the street that they just had to take action to give these people some relief. That is completely outrageous and not believable at all. All right, so that being said, the next thing that needs to be made very clear is that this was not an attempt to arrest Move people. It was a clear, deliberate conspiracy plot to kill every living Move person in that house, even our animals, our dogs and cats. They were determined to annihilate Move. And this is made clear by the fact that they came out there to our home with the weaponry of war. I mean, the weapons they had out there, 50 caliber machine guns, M60 automatic rifles, sniper rifles with silencers on them. Now, why did they need silencers? They had a 20 millimeter armor-piercing anti-tank gun and plastic military explosives called C4. Now, what does all of that have to do with some complaints from neighbors? It is very clear that their aim was to exterminate Move. After they got all of their weaponry set up, and it took all day, because in fact that Sunday morning, one of our supporters named Gloria was going to the market, going food shopping, and we needed a few things, and she was coming by to get some money and a list of what we needed, and we sent some of our children with her. By the time she came back from shopping, which wasn't that long, the police had set a wooden barricade across Osage Avenue. Osage Avenue is a small one-way street, and they had blocked it off with a wooden barricade. When Gloria came back and pulled up to Osage Avenue and saw the barricade, a cop, a black cop who had been familiar with Move, our children, even longer than me, because he had been assigned to Move details from the early 70s, 1970s. And so he was very familiar with Move. His name was George Draper. And he came up to the car when Gloria had stopped because of the barricade, looked in the car, saw Gloria, saw our children, and he promptly went over and moved the barricade so that she could drive back onto the street, let the kids back into the house. Now, this was Sunday morning, Mother's Day, and they were out there, you know, setting up to kill us. Now, they try to tell people that they were concerned about the children and that, you know, they wanted to get the children out of harm's way. Well, they are proven liars because they had the perfect opportunity to have at least some of the children away from the house, but they let them right back onto the street and into the house. And this was not an oversight or whatever. This was deliberate, deliberate, because the police commissioner, Gregory Sambor, stated publicly after the bombing, after our children and adult sisters and brothers and our animals had been literally burned alive, that they considered our children as much of a threat, if not more, than the adults. They considered them combatants. So, you know, this makes it clear that they were determined to kill our children as much as they were determined to kill the adults in that house. People should also know that they came out there with warrants for only four people, myself and three of my sisters and brothers. They knew that there were children in the house and that there were other adults in the house that they did not have warrants for, but they did not care. So after they got all of their equipment set up, they began their attack, their assault, an assault which I have to say they had planned for and rehearsed and practiced and built a simulation of our roof and practiced blowing it up. For over a year, they had put their plan of action together. And once they, you know, got what they felt like was a workable plan, that's when they came out there to, you know, attack move. And like I said, it had nothing to do with any complaints from neighbors. What it had to do with is our unrelenting fight for our MOVE sisters and brothers, known as the MOVE 9, who were arrested in August of 1978 under the false accusation that they killed a cop during a police attack on MOVE back then, which also the intent then was to kill MOVE. And it helps to explain why they came back in 85 with a bomb, because they came out there in 1978 with everything they thought they needed to kill off MOVE, and they failed. And in their fervor to kill MOVE, they ended up killing one of their own. And they were mad about it, although they would never admit, you know, that it wasn't MOVE that killed Officer James Lamp. But they were mad about it, and they wanted to get MOVE. So when they came out there in 1985, they came with more than what they had in 78. They came with military explosives because they were determined to accomplish in 85 what they failed to do in 78. So the whole issue, their whole aim was to shut us up permanently from exposing their conspiracy, keep our family in prison, you know, from 1978. And that is what the bombing was all about, from not about any complaints from neighbors. So after they got all of their artillery set up, they made an announcement, the police commissioner made an announcement, which I did not hear. I don't believe anybody else heard at the time, but we believe that he did make the announcement. He is said to have announced, attention move, this is America. You have to abide by the laws, you know, of our society and some other nonsense like that, and gave us 15 minutes to come out. Now, the point I want to make is that he said, attention move, this is America. He apparently has forgotten what America stands for. You know, this country was founded, according to history, by people from England, no less, from the UK, who came over here escaping oppression and went to war with cops called Redcoats, went to war with King George, you know, went to war with the government at the time, which was the English government, you know, because this was a colony. And my point is, if the police commissioner, Gregory Sambor, had been an English cop, you know, a redcoat, and came in front of Nathan Hale or Patrick Henry's house saying, attention, this is an English colony. You have to abide by the laws of the crown or whatever. What do you think would have happened to him, you know? And what do you think would have happened to the person who took issue with such a statement? They would be seen as a hero, a freedom fighter, you know? But the police commissioner had the nerve to come in front of our house talking about, you know, this is America. I mean, America is supposedly founded on resistance, you know, on resistance. But it's okay for them to resist, but when anybody else resists the tyranny of government, then it's a crime. You know, you're a terrorist. You're a criminal. So anyway, after they got all their equipment set up and made their announcement, and we did not come out, that's when they began their assault. They started with the firefighters who took an oath to save and protect life. You know, they worked with the cops against MOVE, you know, threatening and endangering. They set up 4 water hoses, water cannons. And by their information, these water hoses pump out 10,000 pounds of water pressure per minute. That's a lot of pressure. I don't know if people can even conceive of how much water that is. If anybody has seen the film footage of demonstrations led by Martin Luther King and other civil rights leaders back in the 50s and 60s, and saw how the water hoses were turned on those people, how it knocked people off their feet, you know, it broke windows. It's a lot of pressure. And they had 4 of them, which means 40,000 pounds of water pressure coming in our house per minute. And they had those hoses on for a long time. I don't know exactly how long, but it was a long time. When that didn't work to bring us out of the house, then they used explosives on the walls of our houses on both sides to blow holes in the wall. They claimed they wanted to blow 3-inch holes in the wall to insert tear gas. When they finished using their explosives, they had blown off the whole front of our house. We were all in the basement of our home. They blew off the whole front of our house. And then after they did that, they opened fire. According to their, you know, words, their reports, they shot over 10,000 rounds of bullets into our home. And this was within the first 90 minutes of their attack on us. After they did that, you know, I guess they wanted to make sure that they killed everybody in that house. They brought in a state of Pennsylvania police helicopter, and they had two members of the Philadelphia Police Department's bomb squad put together, compose a bomb made of C4, a plastic military explosive. And they went up in the helicopter, flew over our house with no warning. They didn't announce anything. They just flew over our house and dropped the bomb on the roof of our house. That bomb ignited a fire, which they were informed immediately that there was a fire. And the fire commissioner admits that he was informed immediately that at that point there was mostly smoke and a small, what they call incipient fire, a fire in its very beginning stages, and that they could have extinguished the fire at that point. But they conspired to let the fire burn, and the fire commissioner and firefighters went along with it to let the fire burn. Now, firefighters never do that. They are known for going into burning buildings to save people. But in this situation, they made a conscious decision, knowing they were innocent men, women, babies, animals, in that house that was on fire. And I say innocent without fear of any contradiction, because according to the laws of this country, the legal laws of this country, you are innocent until proven guilty. That's what they said. We had not been proven guilty of anything when they attacked us on May 12th. And 13th of 1985. And yet, they made a decision to let that fire burn. You know, that was unconscionable. As I said, we were in the basement of our home. And initially, we thought that it was still tear gas, you know, in that basement, that all the smoke was tear gas. But it got thicker. And it started getting hot in the basement. And then we started hearing crackling sounds outside the basement. And what had happened was trees had caught fire. And we were hearing the crackling. And we realized that our home was on fire. And we immediately tried to get our children, our animals, ourselves out of that burning building. The instant we came out, and we were coming out the back because that's where the basement exited, you know, out the back, and we were hollering that we were coming out. The children were hollering that they were coming out. The instant those cops saw us coming out, they immediately opened fire with a barrage of gunfire, forcing us back into the burning building. And we were forced back in at least twice that I remember. May have been more, but I remember at least twice. And we were in a situation where you're either going to choke to death and be burned alive, or try to get out and possibly be shot to death. Well, you know, we tried to come out one more time. And at this point, I got out. Birdie got out right behind me. And the bullets that the cops were shooting at us was hitting all around us. But we just kept going, kept coming out. And there were move people right behind us because we were all lined up to come out. And I was immediately taken into custody, and Birdie was immediately taken into custody. That's the little boy that also survived, the only other survivor of the bombing. And they took us into custody immediately. And I did not know until later that nobody else survived. I didn't know that until after they had taken me into custody and had taken me to the nearest hospital in the area. And I was looking to see, you know, who else was coming in, waiting to see the rest of my family. And I didn't see anybody, and I thought maybe they took them, you know, to another hospital or something. And I found out at that point that they had killed everybody else in the house. And the thing is, my family was not just burned alive. The medical examiners had determined that they also had bullet fragments in them, making it clear that, you know, these cops had also shot them, you know, preventing their escape. So, you know, I am the only adult survivor of that police attack. One little boy survived as well. Five babies and six adults were murdered that day. Literally murdered, and not one official up to today, 26 years later, has ever been charged with anything, arrested for anything, or held legally accountable in any way for the murder of my family. The only person to be charged with anything and to go to prison as a result of the events of May of 1985 is me. I was charged with everything that officials did to me and my family. Possession of explosives, arson, risking and causing a catastrophe, simple and aggravated assault, endangering the lives of others. I mean, you name it. Everything that they did, they charged me with. Finally, at the end of my trial, I was convicted of one thing, riot, and I was sentenced to 16 months to 7 years in prison. When my 16-month minimum was up, I was interviewed by the parole board, and they told me they were willing to parole me, but only if I agreed to have absolutely nothing to do with MOVE at all, if I agreed to have no contact with any MOVE person at all. Well, I would never agree to that. I mean, that just wasn't even a consideration. And they gave some of my sisters and brothers who were already in prison and then became eligible for parole that same stipulation. Not one of us accepted it. So I ended up doing the whole 7 years, while the people that murdered my family was never even charged with anything. And I also want to point out that I have family members, the MOVE Nine, who are in prison for the accusation of murder, of killing a cop, which the government knows that they did not kill. But meanwhile, nine MOVE people went to prison for the accusation that they killed one cop. In 85, the cops killed 11 MOVE people as was seen around the world, and not one of them went to prison. Not a one. Now this is what they call justice in America.
Yeah, that's something, isn't it?
Anybody that says they believe in justice, in fairness, in what is right. I mean, this is outrageous. They have our brother Mumia Abu-Jamal, who I'm sure a lot of your listeners know of, on death row. They are clamoring for his blood, for him to be executed for the accusation that he killed the cop, which, you know, it has become more and more obvious that he's innocent, but they continue to call for his blood, you know, calling him a murderer, calling my family the Move 9 murderers. Meanwhile, they burnt babies alive, you know, and they're collecting paychecks, pensions. I mean, this should outrage people. It outrages Move, you know, and this is why Move has no respect for this government, this system, and those that believe as this system, and why we will never, ever give into it, no matter what these officials come at Move with. They have come at us with everything they have. They have come at us with beatings. From the early days of Move, they beat innocent Move people, beat our brothers bloody, beat them into broken limbs and concussions, beat Move women the same, beat pregnant Move women into miscarriage, killed a 3-week-old Move baby. The cops trampled Janine Africa's 3-week-old baby to death. You know, they have imprisoned us unjustly long before May 13th. You know, they came at us with guns, with deluge hoses, with bombs, but they have not stopped us. I want to make it clear, we are not robots, androids, or anything like that. We are living beings. We have feelings. We can be hurt, and we have been hurt by, you know, what has been done to our family over the last almost 40 years now. We can be hurt. We grieve for our family that was murdered by this system from the early days of Move on up to May 13th. And we will never stop grieving for them. So we can be hurt, but we won't be stopped. And that is what's important, because we understand that you are not securing yourself and your family by going along with this system and not fighting it. You are not securing yourself. There are countless examples of people victimized by this system, killed, murdered, shot down by this system, who are not revolutionaries, who never participated in a demonstration, who was not out there saying down with this rotten system or anything like that. People that, you know, lived their lives basically in accordance with this system and were victimized by it nevertheless. Shot down by cops. Amadou Diallo in New York, shot at 41 times by cops, hit 19 times, some of those bullets coming up through the soles of his feet, indicating that he had been shot down, was in a prone position when they continued to shoot at him. He wasn't a revolutionary. He wasn't demonstrating or confronting the system, but he was victimized nevertheless. So, you know, what this system, what officials have done to Move, does not take the fight out of us. It makes us more determined to keep fighting and never stop fighting, because we don't want any more babies, any more children, any more adults even, to have to go through what we have gone through. We want it to stop. We don't want to see any more innocent people like Mumia Abu-Jamal sitting on death row despite his innocence. We don't want to see any more people like the Move Nine sitting in prison with 100-year maximum sentences for a crime they didn't commit. We don't want to see any more people do their 30-year minimum, become 3 years over their minimum, and have the government tell them, no, we're not releasing you unless you lie and say you're guilty, even though we know you're not guilty. We're not releasing you unless you say you're guilty and show remorse. We don't want to see any more babies bombed and burned alive. So we will never, ever stop fighting this system. We will never, ever stop fighting. Even when our family comes home, we will never stop fighting until things are put right. That is the commitment of John Africa's Move organization. That is the understanding and the commitment and strength John Africa has put in committed Move people to never give in.
Wow, that is quite a lot of strength, definitely, and I can definitely understand where it comes from. And I was just wondering, is there a legal, a legal update or any sort of parole updates for the Move Nine? What's going on with them? What's their situation? Because I think they've been recently denied parole, but I could be mistaken.
Well, the last time Move people saw the parole board was last year in 2010. Some of them are scheduled to see the parole board again this year. And what people need to understand is how clearly you can see that this has nothing to do with Move being guilty of anything or Move's record while in prison, which is what the parole board is supposed to be guided by. Because in 2008, when Move people saw the parole board for the first time after 30 years in prison, the parole board denied Move, you know, because Move people would not lie and say they're guilty of something they didn't do. They gave Move people what is called a one-year hit. What that means is that they said, we're not paroling you, but we will interview you, we'll review you again in 1 year. When that year was up, and Move people saw the parole board again for a review in 2009, then the parole board said, no, if you won't say you're guilty, we're denying you again. And they gave everybody but one of my brothers a one-year hit. They gave my brother Edward Africa a two-year hit, with no explanation as to why they gave him something different than everybody else. So, despite the fact, though, that they gave him 2 years, they did, in fact, see him last year in 2010. They interviewed him. They went on, you know, and reviewed him along with everybody else last year. What they did was they gave a few of my family members another one-year hit, you know, another year before they would be reviewed again. They gave some of my family members 2 years before they would be reviewed again. And they gave one of my sisters, Janet Africa, 3 years before they would review her again. Now, the question is, what was the difference between Janet, who got 3 years, my family members who got 2 years, and my family members that got 1 year? And what happened between 2008 and 2010 to make them increase the length of time before they would be reviewed again. You know, what is their justification for going from 1 year between reviews to 3 years? You know, most people hadn't gotten into any fights and, you know, gotten misconducts or had problems. I mean, you know, there was nothing to justify this. So all we see is that they are being forced, officials are being forced to come out in the open more and more for people to see what's happening here. That these people have an agenda, you know, where they are determined they are just not going to release move people no matter what their legal laws say, no matter what, you know, the sentence is. Because the judge who sentenced moved people said 30 to 100 years. What that means is that on the 30-year minimum, barring any bad prison record, you know, providing that they have an acceptable home to go to, you know, upon release, and that they have a job if required, you know, to go to when they're released, then they are supposed to be released. If everything is in order, they are supposed to be released on their minimum. The parole board is basically saying, we don't care what the judge said. We don't care what their sentence is. We're not releasing them. That basically amounts to resentencing them. And it's not just move people. Parole boards across the United States are doing this with whoever they choose to. I can't say they do it with every single person, but they are doing it more and more, particularly with political prisoners, but even people who they don't consider political prisoners. They're just doing this. While at the same time, crying and boo-hooing and complaining about the overcrowding in the prison, you know?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
But then he's like,
I would like to say, first and foremost, because I always like to leave people with a way to contact us. And we have an email address, which is on the move, that's onamoveellja, for Long Live John Africa, at AOL.com. On the move, LLJA at AOL.com. And people can contact us that way. And for anybody that doesn't have a computer, because there are people who don't have computers, you can either call us at area code 215-386-1165. That's area code 215-386-1165, or you can write us at P.O. Box 19709, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, 19143. And I would just like to say that, you know, MOVE is a revolutionary organization, and John Africa have explained to us that the activity of a revolutionary is to very simply be an example for people, you know, who haven't gotten to that point yet, to be an example for people so that when conditions of this system push people to revolt, push them into the flow of revolution, that they have a strong, trusting, consistent example to look to follow, that, you know, they can be guided by. And that's the work the MOVE organization have been doing for close to 40 years now.